It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
What up, everybody? Hey, welcome to Money for Lunch. I'm so excited to have you here. Really, it's been a fantastic week. You're saying, Bert, it's only Tuesday. What do you mean it's been a fantastic week? I guess I meant I'm excited. What can I say? A lot of great things happening and always exciting to spend time with you guys and see if we can help you, give you some nuggets of information to help you grow your business, to have a better life. And generally, do more by doing less. So something I want you to think about, all right? And this is going to sound kind of oxymoronic. So when most people think, hey, I want to grow my market, I want to expand my sales, they think of going wider. But here's the oxymoronic thing about marketing, that the narrower you go, the faster your sales expand. So, for example, if you are marketing to dentists, that's a very general group. If you want to expedite that, go for, let's say dentists who are starting their business or dentists who are, in a specific regional area or something that really kind of helps you narrow it down because you can market to those guys better. Maybe you're going to market to dentists who only work with children, right? And so what happens, because you're able to niche down your market, you're able to get into their head better and market to them better, right? Because if you are marketing to dentists who only specialize in children, that's going to be a completely different message than dentists who, let's say, specialize with the elderly or or family dentistry. Bottom line is, if you want to expand your sales faster, narrow your description, narrow your ideal client. The more you know, understand about your ideal client, the better you'll be able to attract them, and therefore your sales will grow faster. Does that make sense? The leaner your pipeline, the faster you'll generate sales. And in some cases, even bigger, more profitable sales. I know, again, sounds weird, but it'd be true, man. It'd be true. You cannot be all things to everybody, or you become nothing to nobody. So another way of looking at this is you look at, let's say, a car brand like a Ford. How much is a Ford? What is a Ford? Well, a Ford could be a truck, could be a two-door car, could be a four-door car, could be a four-door car with a hatchback. It could be a big car, a small car, could be a big truck or a small truck. And so they struggle constantly, as opposed to you look at a brand like a Toyota, who also owns Lexus. They market them completely different. Or you look at a Ferrari. Most people tell you exactly what a Ferrari is, right? They know it's two-door sports car, high-end. That is what happens when you're able to narrow down who you're trying to reach. Just give that some thought. Hey, today I'm excited. My first guest is William Pullen. And William Pullen is a psychotherapist registered with the British Association of Counseling and Psychotherapy. He practices integrative therapy and specializes in the treatment of depression, anxiety, and problems of self-esteem and confidence and substance abuse. He has been featured in publications such as Vogue, The New York Times, and GQ. His integrative, instructive new book, Running with Mindfulness, Dynamic Running Therapy to Improve Low Mood, Anxiety, Stress, Depression, works with the reader to encourage a sense of confidence while practicing DRT, Dynamic Running Therapy, and tackling tough emotional issues. William Pullen, welcome to Money for Lunch. Well, that's odd. He's not there. What's going on?
Here,
all right. Oh, there he is. I can hear you now. Perfect.
It's great to
all right.
Thank you. I'm sorry. That's speaking from London there.
Yeah, that's right. Well, so thank you for joining us from London. I think it's, if I remember correctly, it's what, like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning there? Is that what it is?
No, you've got it the wrong way around. In fact, it's 4 in the afternoon.
4 in the afternoon. All right. So the other way around completely.
It's
all
tea
right.
time.
All right.
Yes, exactly.
Tea time. That's right. That's right. All
tea
right.
Time.
Well, you know what? What do you call it? And you know what? This is a great example I was talking about. You know, here you are. You work specifically with people who have low mood, anxiety, stress, and depression. You know, as opposed to working with every, you know, problem out there. You've narrowed your niche down to work with this. And I want you to start off by telling us about this dynamic running therapy, this DRT, and how did you come about that?
Well, okay, so I developed it about 11 years ago. It was based on a personal experience. I was having a tough time in my life, and really wanted to try and find a way to address it. So I threw everything but the kitchen sink at it. I took up therapy. I took up running. I took up boxing. I think I was doing yoga. But out of all of those, even more than the therapy, actually, I think I found the running the best, because at the time, I think I was kind of depressed and confused. But I found with the running, which I was doing with a friend of mine who was also going through a tough time, he was going through a divorce, I found it empowering. I found it enlightening. I found I was the boss. I could talk about what I wanted to. I could push myself a bit harder. I felt that I was making progress as somebody who, prior to that, had felt very disempowered. Now, look at me. I was the guy that was running 150 meters on Tuesday, 170 on Friday. And so that's the birth of it. I then trained to become a therapist, and here I am on your show.
I love it. All right. So dynamic running therapy. And you know what? It's one of those things where I think it speaks to one of the things that's lacking in our society, and that is, you know, kind of just getting out there and relieving stress, if you will, and you know, nowadays, and I want your give me your thoughts on this. It seems like nowadays we're all about the quick fix, right? So if we're low on energy, yep, let's have a, you know, let's grab some energy drink. And sometimes maybe the best thing to do is take a nap if you're low on energy, or, you know, ideally get more sleep during the night. But, you know, if you can't do that, then maybe take a nap versus taking, we'd call it more caffeine or more energy type products. And instead of doing this dynamic running therapy, give me a pill instead, because that's going to be faster. And it seems like we've lost our willingness to invest in ourselves, and we're relying on the quick fix, whether it's a pill or an energy drink or, you know, whatever it is. What is your thought on that?
I think you've hit it absolutely spot on. I think that's exactly where we're at, right? We live in the age of hacks. And a hack is a great thing. I mean, I would never, particularly to somebody who's in a state of crisis, I would say hack away. But, you know, once you're out of the worst of the crisis, let's now start looking at what's behind it. Let's start seeing what you can do that's going to be a useful and ongoing way to address whatever it is and find a better way of living your life. And that's not going to be taking caffeine. It's going to be trying to search, is there something behind me feeling? Do I feel spiritually exhausted? Is this coming from somewhere else? Am I exhausted from maintaining the illusion that I'm happy in this job or this relationship? And so I'm also having to drink just to make myself believe all of that. It's looking at those things and deciding to do something practical about it.
Yeah. And I think that's, I like that. Deciding to do something practical about it, I think, is the key phrase there, because, again, there are certainly a lot of different things that we can do. And I like the other thing that I don't want to gloss over, and that is maybe you're emotionally exhausted, maybe it's spiritually exhausted, maybe it's the relationship that's not serving you anymore, maybe it's the job that's killing you, maybe it's, you know, what is the root of your exhaustion, right? Maybe you're doing everything right, but there's, again, it's not a physical, it's an emotional thing. I like that. I think that's, again, something that we have so much noise about, so many things at once coming at us, that, you know, this idea of dynamic running therapy sounds great, because, as you said, you're out there by yourself, you're in control, you know, that has to be a very freeing experience.
I think so. And as you said, you know, it's about shutting down some of that noise. There's so much of it. And it's about saying, okay, so there's not much I can do about this noise and this noise, but what I can do is carve out half an hour of a day for myself where I go for a quiet walk. Maybe my book's got mindful walking and mindful running in it as well. It doesn't have to be hardcore therapy.
Right.
All of these things really help you just relax and reroute yourself to the world and to yourself. You know, when you're overstimulated, somewhat facetiously to say, that's how the man wants you to be. That's what
right.
I do to keep you away from, you know, really representing what you need to, and instead just keep you popping pills and buying things, which is, you know, a great way to run a country if it's being run by corporations. But it's up to each of us to make peace with ourselves. You know, then we can talk about what we owe to our communities, what we owe to our families. It begins at home. It really does. And I think that's a big part of the crisis that you see in healthcare over here and in America, particularly with obesity. I think it's to do with starting at home and having that good relationship with yourself and not thinking, if I eat this a little bit more, I'll feel better about myself, because you know you won't, not for very long anyway.
Right, right. You know, and the other thing that I've noticed too is that, we've had this resurgence, if you will, I'll say resurgence. I'm looking for something else, but we've had this We have Spartan races, we have Tough Mudder, we have these obstacle courses that really test us, and they've exploded on the scene in multiple variations. And CrossFit's another one where we are connecting with our bodies, right? We're connecting with nature. And I want to get your thoughts on this, because it seems like this is something else that is missing from our lives is this connection that we have with nature and why that's important.
Oh, my God. I mean, you've absolutely hit it on the head there. It's so important. You know, it's we're still wired up. Our brains, our bodies, our DNA, our immune system is wired up for the outside, and it's wired up for adventures. It's wired up for risk-taking. And it's wired up for all these things. And when you live in a little box and you go from one box that you sleep in like a little hamster in its warm little hutch, and then you go to another box and you just fiddle around in that box, that is not what the human spirit is all about. Plus, you're not getting the biology, the microbes off the trees and the grass. You're not getting any of that chemical uplift that you get from movement and being outside. So, you know, we've lost that. Plus, you need to be out, ideally do things with other people outside is even better. Then you're getting it all. You know, go hiking with people, play tennis, do whatever. But get doing things and go on adventures and live. You know, that's the way to feel, I think, to feel strong.
Yes. And this is something that, again, I think, and I'm going to use your terminology, the man has, you know, the man has put this out there and people have believed it. And this has been going on for decades now, and that is risk is to be avoided. Looking bad is to be avoided. Failing is to be avoided. And the reality is that when you look at the icons of the world, they're all about failing and getting up and failing some more. And then, yeah, you know, they're going to have successes. But you look at people who put it all on the line, and they don't care what they look like. They don't care about failing. And I'm going to use, this MMA, no, it wasn't an MMA, it's a boxing fight, boxing match between Mayweather and,
and the Irishman.
O'Connor. McGregor.
McGregor.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. And so here's a guy who, first of all, I respect a lot, because first thing he did is he conquered his weight class in MMA or UFC. Then he changed his weight class in UFC, conquered that. So now he's got two different divisions there. And then he decided, right, you know what, I'm going to try this boxing thing. And nobody expected him to win, but yet look what he did. He got he got people talking about boxing for the first time in years. I mean, everybody was talking about this oddball match that there's no way he's going to beat Mayweather, but if he did, it was going to be, it's just sensational kind of a thing. And here's a guy who risked losing. And let me tell you, most champions would not risk losing. And they certainly wouldn't risk starting over again in a different competitive field. But I think that, and I'm using that as an extreme example, but we have gotten away from challenging ourselves, because there's so many of us that are afraid to fail.
Well, it's because you're not out there taking risks as a kid. When I was a kid, you know, this is beginning to sound like... When I was a kid, I did a lot of crazy stuff, right? I mean, my parents let me run around all sorts of stuff. And I took risks, and I learned how to look after myself. And I learned how to be resilient. I learned how to get from A to B. I learned how to start fires. I learned how to do all these different things. And that gave me a strong sense of my own capability, made me want to push it all the time. And as an adult, I still have that, and I have a strong sense of my ability. I believe that if you drop me off, and even though I'm a city dweller, I'm not any sort of, you know, I'm not some sort of guy with a Bowie knife in the countryside chopping up wood to make houses and boats. But I still believe that I'm resilient, and part of me longs to be tested to find out whether I'm as tough as I thought I was when I was a kid. I have a childlike thing. I think what happens is that kids increasingly aren't given those adventures when they're young, so they don't end up with that. And then, as you said, we live in this world where we're being given this risk-averse message, where we're mollycoddled too much. And the fact is that if you think of it in this equation, I should be willing to entertain the thought of failing at this, because if I'm not, what I'm saying is I'm making the statement, I can't afford to lose. I'm making the statement, I'm too fragile. Well, if you're too fragile, you need to look at that. Build yourself up so that you can lose. Don't keep on avoiding testing yourself, because you'll end up more and more and more fragile, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So that's my theory behind it. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that, and I want to get you also, I'm going to ask you this follow-up question. As a psychotherapist, I think that this is a reason why so many people struggle with anxiety and depression, is that they have been brainwashed into thinking that they should avoid risk, and they should, excuse me, that they should be overly concerned with what other people think about them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we now know quite a lot about depression. If you're depressed, you can get a book, and there's a lot of tools in there that will really help you. And if you're really that chronically depressed, and take some medication, and then you can pick up the book. That sounds simplistic. I know that people's pain is profound, and it can take a long time to get to that place, but it's available to most people. So, yeah, I think you need to test yourself. You need to be willing to, when you get into a rut, don't stay in that rut and ask yourself, you know, why life is so tough. Instead, try and break out of the rut. Take some risks. Just as you said, that's what life's all about. Anything less, and most likely you will end up depressed. You know, as they said, if I like that saying, if you're not evolving, you're dying. You know, if you're not growing, if you're not out doing things, if you're not taking risks, you know, a lot of people don't understand the true meaning of the word resilience. I don't know how it's understood over there, but I can tell you over here it's misunderstood often, because the British, as you know, we have this stiff upper lip thing where we're very good at sort of holding on tight and being the last person to let go, so that, you know, the Brits are always there and we keep on going. Well, actually, resilience isn't about that. Resilience is not being able to keep on going like that. Resilience comes from the Latin resiliere, which means to rebound, to rebound. Mm. So it means to once more go into the breach, which takes us to a bit of Shakespeare there, keeping it British. Once more onto the breach, dear friends. So we go in and we come out. We test ourselves. We go back into love. We go back into another, an entrepreneurial thing, even though we've just lost our shirt, even though our heart's been hurt. And we go back in again, because we recognize that that's living. What we don't do is choose safety every time. One of my favorite things is a film called Shadowlands about the writer C.S. Lewis. And in that, he says in a true story about C.S. Lewis, and he says an adult, he says, I learned that as a child I chose safety, and that actually didn't work for me. And as an adult, he said, I've learned I've got to take risks.
Yes. Yeah, I like that. You know, it's one of my favorite stories, and this is something that I think will shock a lot of people if they've not heard the story before. And this happens to be, I think, a great example of one of your most celebrated countrymen there, and that is Sir Richard Branson. And the story goes that when Branson was a young man, I think at the age of 4 or 5 or 6, his mother drove him out to, I guess they lived out in the country or whatever. Either way, he was driven out like a mile or two from his home and dropped that in the middle of wherever he was dropped, and his mother said, okay, find your way home. And because of that early age experience, he talks about the fact that it really helped him become into trusting himself and not to worry about a lot of things like failing and things of that nature. And you know, it was like, it took him a couple hours to get home, but to this day, he talks about it as a very good experience.
That's a great story. Yeah. And I mean, what it teaches you is that it might seem impossible to get home or to get to wherever you want to get to, or you recover from that love affair, to start a new love affair. But actually, just keep moving, keep believing, keep putting one foot in front of the other, and sooner or later you'll get home.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? And I love what you just said there, because that obviously has double meaning. You just got to keep going out there, and eventually you'll get home, whatever home means to you. Maybe finding that special loved one. Maybe it's getting back to your whatever your place in your heart or whatever. Let's talk about this. One of the things that I'm curious about DRT, dynamic running therapy, is how does DRT overcome depression? Talk about this.
Okay, so the book has a chapter, and in it is a program. The chapter is dedicated to depression. It has an entire, what I call DRT journey for depression. And there are 20 questions in there that you're going to run with, and walk, and sit. And you're going to run and walk, sit with them as many times as you like. Some may not seem applicable, others you may want to do several times. And each question, I talk a lot about what is depression, and I ask you to read these questions and then run with them and answer that question as you run. So you carry that question with you. And what I found with running therapy is that by holding it lightly with you, even if you're not even exactly thinking about it, but just have it there at the beginning of the run, have your intention to be with it, that sometimes you strange things happen during the run, and you can make peace with elements of it, you can gain understanding from it, of it, gain focus for it. Things happen. So you record at the end of every question after your run, you write down what it is that you answered the question, and then you keep on doing this until you feel like you've learned a lot about how you relate to depression, how you relate to your feelings, how self-accepting you are. What self-acceptance means to you. Are you somebody who likes to avoid difficulties? Are you like to fix unpleasant feelings? What would it be like to just be with them? Can you acknowledge? I'm a big one about acknowledgement, you know. And then finally, when you feel like you've made some real progress, you've done a lot of running, you're feeling better, you write what's known as the final synopsis, which is the sort of ritual you go through where you're going to look at all of your notes, which you've been transferring into a journal, hopefully, and you write down a story, a synopsis of where you've been, where you are, and where you think you're going, where you'd like to be. And that's the DRT journey. And I think that the healing happens in the knowing. The healing happens in the dedication to make peace with yourself through this questioning, because it's very much about that. The healing happens through the fresh air. The healing happens through the empowerment. The healing happens through the agency that you manage to find in yourself. So I think I'm excited because I think it's a very affordable way for people to do therapy, and for people who don't have the time or the money or the wherewithal to get to therapy, all you got to do is get to your local park or wherever it is. And it's yours.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that you said, is just getting out there, right? Getting out there in the fresh air, getting out there and moving, getting out there and doing all this stuff. And one of the other things I want to, again, clarify this is that if you can't run, that's okay. You can walk. You don't have to run, correct?
Correct. But I do want you to get out there, and I do want you to push yourself a little bit. You know, don't just amble the whole way. I do want to say, listen, I acknowledge that with depression, the first thing you want to do is isolate, stay at home, and you have no energy. I get that. So I know what a titanic struggle it is to get out and apply yourself to something like this. So for people who are sitting at home going, oh, well, that's easy to say. If I could get out, I would have already sorted myself out. I don't need you to tell me that. Well, what I say to them is, you know what, if you can't do it on this particular day, then don't do it. Maybe you can just write some thoughts about it and hold on to the intention to do it tomorrow. But just try it. See how far you can get. Let's have an attitude of let's see what we can do, not what we can't do. Nobody's expecting miracles. It's a patient, compassionate journey. But it does need to be one that people are invested in. But again, another quick defense that I would say which I think is one of the reasons why I'm proud of the book is I don't think you would have bought the book if you weren't ready to at least apply yourself a little bit. So I believe that the book is a good tool for people who are ready to find a tool. It's not for people who are, absolutely overwhelmed. Probably not.
Right. One of the things that I do want to emphasize, you said there about, maybe today just write down the intention. And sometimes that does help, right? Because we start thinking about it. And, I can't remember the person. They are a health and fitness type individual, and she told me that for some of her clients, she would just have their clients change out of their work clothes and into some fitness clothes, right? Whatever that they like to work out in, and not leave the house, but just start changing from your work clothes to your fitness clothes, whatever that means to you, or your running clothes, and just, get back into the mood of or get back used to changing and doing that. And that she says that, about 50% of her clients will not only change their clothes, but then will do something. Maybe they'll do some stretching. Maybe they'll go outside and walk around a little bit. But it's just doing this little tiny thing that sometimes will encourage you to do a little bit more.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. And, when I was doing my learning to be a psychotherapist, I was doing a master's. If you'd said to me years ago that I would have done a master's, I would have never believed you. I was terrible at school. But in between being terrible at school and becoming an adult and the various crises and troubles and skills that I learned, one thing that I learned when I was around that period, which is when I was turning 40, is that if you just keep on putting one foot in front of another, it's amazing where you can get to. Don't worry about, I'll never make it to the end. Worry about this foot, then worry about the end. The end will come or not. The other thing I've learned in this life is not only is it more important about the foot that we put down now than worrying about the end, but we never end up where we think we're going to end up anywhere, right? People
That's
are sitting
right.
there going, oh, I can't do this business plan because I've worked it out and within 3 years we're going to be gobbled up by this company or we'll hit this problem. First we'll hit this one, I can deal with this one, then we'll hit that one. Like, you don't know where you'll be in 3 years, least of all in this climate. You can prepare to some extent, but to catastrophize on the assumption that there's some sort of the world's going to give you collude with your assessment of where you're going to be and where you, how you think this thing's going to work out. Things just don't work out like that. You have to be nimble. You have to work with what's happening on the ground. You have to be prepared to make some changes, but don't just sort of catastrophize because you can see problems at the end of the day. That doesn't get you anywhere.
Right, right. And, you know, it's something that you said there that a lot of people sometimes forget, and this is a perfect example of what you said, that where we start isn't where we end up. And I want to say that about 80% of the people that I know that have a degree in one field have never practiced or no longer practice in that field that they got the degree in. Because
interesting.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, they start, hey, I'm going to become a lawyer, and maybe they go to law school and maybe they get a law degree, but then they decide being a lawyer is no longer for me, you know, or it's not really what I wanted. So they go on to do something else. I knew this one gentleman who his first degree was in physical therapy, hated being a physical therapist. And so he went back to school and became an engineer. And after he got these two degrees, he put himself through school working for Federal Express with these two degrees. And what did he do? He decided, you know what, I love working for Federal Express. So he stayed at Federal Express. And it's just so funny to me, exactly what you're saying, that you never know where the journey is going to take you, but you got to start with that one foot in front of the other. And maybe your business gets gobbled up. To me, that's a good thing. I'd love to have that as an exit strategy. Or maybe you redefine the industry. Maybe you disrupt it. Something else happens. But again, it's just, you know, what is that Gandhi say? Gandhi said about the journey of 1,000 miles starts with that first step or something like that. All right, so let me ask you this. Where it comes to DRT and parents, how can parents use DRT to create a bonding or understanding with their kids? This, to me, is very important. Talk about this.
Oh, I'm really glad you asked that. Do you run yourself? Are you a runner?
You know what? I am not a runner per se. I do work out every day, and I do things stretch my cardio. So I'll do certain movements that require me to, to push myself, my cardio wise, but I'm not a runner per se. Now, I used to run quite a bit, just got away from it.
Okay. Well, the reason I was going to ask you is, and I'm glad you're doing that other stuff, because it's so good for mental health, which is what this chat's about. But the reason I was asking is because if you do run, you might have noticed in the park there's an increasing movement now for parents to run with their kids. And nothing makes me happier than when I see even on weekends, you see a mom and dad and two boys and a girl. You see a whole family of five having run. And you look at the smiles on everybody's face. You'll never see any happier family than a family that's out running together, you know. Everybody's getting something different out of it. Anyway, so I just think it's a fantastic pastime. So in the book, what I've done is I've put different ways to get your child running and different exercises once to get them there, because often they're reluctant to start. So there are ways in there to make it more fun. And then questions you can ask to create a closeness and a bonding with them. Because, you know, often we find ourselves almost half estranged from our kids these days. They're so busy on their computers, and we're so busy that you hardly know how to talk to each other anymore and what's going on in their lives. So this is an opportunity to look at some of these questions, decide what you want to run with, and get to know your kid. And guess what? The kids who, of course, are embarrassed to be put on the spot, as just about anybody is, when they're running, they're distracted. So you can get them talking about all sorts of things. It's quite a clever hack. It's the same thing that works with my adult DRT. Because you've got a sense of movement and engagement, shared engagement, people, it loosens up the tongue and people talk and they get in touch with their feelings. And people will say things, your kids included, that they wouldn't have said otherwise, and tell you about the struggles they're going through. So I just think it's a fantastic way to have difficult conversations and just to have fun and get your kid out and make him feel strong and proud, not, you know, sitting in a like a couch potato, his entire self-esteem dependent on whether he kills another creature on the screen, you know.
Right.
It shouldn't be about that. It should be about, you know, did I run hard? Did I run fast? Did I challenge myself today? Did I have fun today? Did I express myself today? That's what it should be about. So, yeah, I'm really, really happy about that element. And you know, I'm planning a run in 2019 across America. And I'm going to be inviting school children to join me and adults. And it's going to be all about that, all about sharing and talking, what I call empathy runs. So this exercise
you
can do to teach you. Yeah. Oh, I'm really excited about it. I'm slightly nervous as well. It's a long way to go. But I think it's doable.
Sure.
Says the man
who's
only ever done one marathon.
Well, you know,
but, you
you've
know,
done one more than I did.
Right. But, you know, we were just talking about resilience there and challenging yourself. I've found I'm capable of so much more than I thought. And here again, I mean, how many people have run across America? I think it's an absurd idea. I've got bad knees. They cut out at about 10 miles at a run, but I figure I can do a bit of walking at 10 miles. I just want to throw myself into it. And if I fail, I fail, you know. But
yeah.
I'm really excited about the challenge. Let's find out what I'm capable of and what I'm going to discover that I can't see now.
Absolutely. You know, the other thing, going back to the kids, I've been blessed. I have, my wife and I have been married for 33 years. We have 5 kids. And one of the things that we notice, and one of the things that we notice is that our kids would argue or quarrel or have less contention when they were doing something physical. And that could be a walk, a hike. It could be, we like to do stuff on the water as a family. And when we're doing something physical, we had this very, very much of a bonding experience. Now, when your kids are sitting at home and they're watching TV or they're watching their phones or they're playing video games for hours, I believe that they become restless, and that's why it become contentious, and that's why they argue, and because they're not being they're missing something. And so I just wanted to throw that out there, because I wholeheartedly agree with what you're saying, that there's not only that there's this bonding experience, and you're totally right, because when kids, just like anybody else, but I think it works really quick with kids. When kids become physical, they tend to relax, and all of a sudden they're talking to you, and they are talking to you about, you know, things that they're afraid of, or kids at school, or their teachers, or whatever it is that otherwise they would keep bottled up, because all they're doing is interacting with a video screen.
You know, slightly segueing, talking about the value of kids and moving. You know, we were touching on anxiety a little bit there, but one of my favorite writers, he's dead now, but a guy called Rollo May, who's one of the most important psychotherapy writers you can find out there, wrote a book on anxiety, I think in the 1980s or 70s. And I think it was called The Meaning of Anxiety or something like that. Anyway, in it, he had a very different way of looking at anxiety. He said, you know, anxiety is the stuff of life. And he said often it's from unspent or misspent energy, but particularly unspent energy. So that if I'm sitting in front of a computer screen and not using my body, my soul, my spirit the way I should be, all that energy backs up inside of me. And after a while, I'm not sure what to do with it. I'm the person who doesn't know why it's in me. I'm the person who doesn't know what to do with it. And I go to a party and I'm all nervous and edgy. And I ask myself why I'm like that. So I think he also talks about it as a sexual energy, which in a Freudian sense, you know, sexuality is understood in terms of the power of life, the drive towards life. There should be an urgency and an excitement in your life. And if you're not feeling it and you're not doing anything that's fun or challenging, dancing, woodwork, whatever it may be, learning Russian, if you're not doing anything, then there's a good chance you are anxious. You should be anxious, because that anxiety is your energy. It's your soul telling you that you need to change something. You're in the wrong job. You're in the wrong relationship, or you need to change something about your relationship. It may not be the wrong relationship. You may just be doing something wrong within the relationship. You may be drinking too much. Who knows what it is? But movement's often part of it. Decision making, movements, get going, and that will often help with anxiety, particularly for kids. Get them out. Get those kids doing things. Geez, I tell you what, I think about my childhood here in England back in the day then, which of course my parents had been born right around the war and had been brought with children during the war, one of them was. And back then, you know, my father ran around London during the Blitz. His favorite thing was after a night of bombing, he'd go out and collect all the shrapnel lying around on the streets of London. So that kind of adventure, he was a real self-starter in life. I guess he'd been exposed to quite a lot. That's what, in a way, that's what we owe to our kids. And I'm sure you agree. Something about getting them out and trying things and challenging them so they too can feel like self-starters.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. Absolutely. Well, let me ask you this. You know, from your experience as a psychotherapist just everything in general, why do you think movement is such a powerful antidote to depression, anxiety, and things like that nature?
Well, in part because we're still hunter-gatherers. You know, I think that's how we're wired up. We've only just got off of the plains. You know, up in the last 100,000 years, whatever it is, we've spent as groups, you know, hunting down antelope, going out there in groups of four or five and just exhausting an antelope by just following it for a day or 2 days or 3 days. And of course they've got different hearts to ours, and so they're very good at sprinting off very quickly, but then they get quiet, they get tired very quickly. It's the same thing with kangaroos are enormous, bouncing around, but you get them bouncing around long enough and keep on their tail, within about 2 hours they'll just sit there and they won't be able to get up. Their muscles lock up, and then you just, if you're hungry, you know what comes next. And that's what we've been doing, you know, and communicating with others, saying, look, Org, you go that way, I go this way, and creating plans and becoming the ones that I am, the man that decided today, this was my plan, this is how I activated it, and this is the meat that feeds my family. That's living in the real world. It's not pushing, you know, digital things around on your computer. So I think movement is what hormonally, spiritually, mythologically, it's what we are wired up for.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, and I think we see this all the time, and I think that's why, as I said in the beginning of the show, that we have all these people that are now being pulled into these obstacle courses to get outside of their comfort zone, to push themselves, to do all these different things. And I love this idea of dynamic running therapy, And is the book called Dynamic Running Therapy? Because I don't actually have the title of the book.
It's called Running with Mindfulness.
Oh, there it is. I'm sorry. There
Running
it is.
With
yeah.
Mindfulness.
Running with Mindfulness. And it's available where, I'm thinking, Amazon or wherever good books are sold?
Yep, absolutely. Barnes and Nobles, all the normal places.
I love it. Running with Mindfulness is the name of the book. Running with Mindfulness, Dynamic Running Therapy to Improve Low Mood, Anxiety, Stress, and Depression. I love it. I love it. William Poland, thank you so much for stopping by today.
My pleasure. And can I just say, if your listeners have got any questions, they can get hold of me through my website, dynamicrunningtherapy.com. They can find me on Twitter at Pullen Therapy. Or there's even a free app as well, Dynamic Running Therapy. So hopefully they'll find something to help them.
I love it. Dynamicrunningtherapy.com. Or you can check them out on Twitter. William Pullen, thank you so much for stopping by.
Pleasure. Thank you so much. Enjoyed it. Bye-bye.
Good stuff there from William Poland, Dynamic Running Therapy. And you know what? This is something that I like it because it's not based on technology. It's not based on batteries. It's not based on how many likes you have, and it's not based on anything else other than you getting out. And one of the keys there is to push yourself. So maybe today you walked, you ran, you jogged a mile. Maybe tomorrow you do a mile in a couple steps, right? Or maybe you did it in 10 minutes and then tomorrow you're going to try to do it in 9.5 minutes, right? So just push yourself. What I have experienced when I've done this kind of stuff is that you do feel better. You feel confident to overcome your obstacles and your fears, and that's important because ultimately that is what it is about. How you feel is more important than what you know. And man, if you feel confident, then you can accomplish a lot, as opposed to when you feel weak and depressed, we don't want to even get out of bed. As always, I'm so grateful that you stopped by. I'm grateful that you guys supported my show for so many years now. I appreciate it. I appreciate the shares. I appreciate all the support on Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn and Instagram. And don't forget, stop by youtube.com, Burt J. Martinez, youtube.com/Burt J. Martinez. I got some great videos up there. And remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.